Good morning, good evening, good night, NBN, Entrepreneurship and Leadership.
Personally, I'm fascinated by the story.
Trust is an underrated weapon in the business landscape.
I'm a really, really strong believer in learning by doing.
What's the definition of success?
You're trying to come up with an answer to the question. But go ahead, Richard.
You could be right, but you're wrong.
Good morning, good evening, good night, Entrepreneurship and Leadership Channel listeners on the New Books Network. I'm here with my friend and business partner, Kimon Fontakidis, and our special guest, Jonathan Gorchitzo, who I believe is joining us from Buffalo. Jonathan is the founder of both MentorDeck and a company called Helm Experience and Design. But Jonathan, rather than me try to introduce you, why don't you do it the way you would do it if you met someone new?
Yeah, thanks, Richard, and thanks, Kimon, for having me today. I'm really excited to be here. I've been a product designer for closing in on 20 years, working with early stage companies, entrepreneurs, innovators, typically in the 0 to 1 product range, bringing these things to life. And for the past 9 years, I've been running a digital product studio called Helm, where we're working with other people, entrepreneurs, again, larger businesses who want to act like a startup to create their digital products. For the past couple of years, we've been building MentorDeck, which is an online platform for organizing and tracking the interactions within these micro communities that we let you create. And yeah, I'm excited to be here. I'm excited about all new technology and all topics we'll get into today.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much for that. And you know, the main topic of the podcast is entrepreneurship and leadership. And so I picked up, the first thing I came across was MentorDeck. And then when we were first speaking last week, I picked up that you had become, I think, a shareholder. You described Helm Experience and Design as a kind of venture studio, in a sense. You're almost like a kind of outsourced co-founder. Or could you describe the business model, because we didn't talk about it last time, but I picked up that you've become a shareholder in some of the companies you provide software for. Is that correct?
That's right. Helm is a services company. So again, early stage entrepreneurs come to us and they have an idea for an application. They might be industry experts or whatever, and they want to create something in the world. And they come to us, we help them shape those ideas into viable products, usually bring them to market or evolve them in that second stage. We help them get through the design, product strategy, full stack development, usually up through the first couple of years of their life until they're ready to bring on a full-time team. Sometimes we'll provide guidance on a more senior level beyond that. And sometimes we will do work for options in these companies where we believe in the founders and we believe in the idea. And we kind of want to share some of that risk with them.
Okay, so you started at least two ventures we're aware of, these the two we've referred to, but if you go back earlier in your life, was it obvious to you and your family that one day you'd be the owner or co-founder of a business, or is that something you sort of stumbled into later, or were your parents surprised, or was it always going to happen?
Yeah, I would say I came from a traditional background where my parents were more in the space of go find that company and stay there for the long term. It's more safe. They've always supported me in all my endeavors, but ultimately that was the mindset that they were raised in. I would say about 15 years ago is when this community started to emerge, and I became aware of it more so here in Buffalo, New York, of the idea that people can create a company, create something from nothing, use technology to enable businesses, whether it's service company, product company, you create this stuff and everybody's doing it and figuring it out along the way. So that startup ecosystem here in Buffalo, New York, I give a lot of credit to as having my back and really pushing everything forward.
Yeah, and when I was doing a bit of research, and am I right in thinking that the sort of the startup community is based around something called 43N? Is that right, or is that something different? Because I just Googled, I looked entrepreneurship in Buffalo, and that's what came up. Was that the community you're part of and you're providing sort of support to?
Absolutely. So 43 North is an incubator. So they provide mentorship services and all sorts of activities and programming to help a cohort kind of year after year. They give away $5 million every single year. And that emerged I want to say 7 or 8 years ago. And before that, there was another local incubator called Z80 Labs. And, you know, they were a huge part of starting this ecosystem. So there, it's all kind of intertwined. Obviously, Helm is a services company, many others. It was more about the community. We would get together for coffee, discuss new tech. Hey, you're starting something. Oh, I need an interface designer. You need this. And it was really grassroots to begin with. A few of my friends, my co-founder and Helm, you know, they were meeting in a coffee shop, just chatting about exciting things happening in the world and in technology. And that slowly grew and grew and grew. And now we have this wonderful ecosystem.
Fantastic. And when was the first time you became a shareholder? Obviously, you founded your own business. Or maybe when did you actually, can you take us through the origin story of your first business then? When was the moment you thought, I want to have my own company rather than work for someone else? Do you remember that moment?
I remember the feeling, right? And it was this excitement that others were doing it and pushing, bringing their ideas to life. And I knew that the skill I had, my technical training in design, interaction design, interface design, which, you know, grew up and became UX design. And I remember that term started to really grab hold. You weren't just a designer or a web designer. There was UX designer, and experiences really mattered. People care about them as a way to differentiate their product. And I had this ability. And so it was at that moment that we said, okay, there's a wonderful ecosystem emerging. A lot of our friends are creating companies. Z80 Labs is furthering, you know, these innovations and these inventions. 43 North, we kind of heard through the wind that, you know, the state is going to be involved and really continue to grow this. And it was at that point that my partner and I, who we had met in college in the digital media program, we said, hey, you know, there's this opportunity. You know, we believe that we could provide a really valuable service to a lot of people as these things emerge. So we started Helm as a design studio. It was a UX design studio because we had those skills and we could provide those services very quickly. I would say, you know, a year or 2 years in, we grew to a full stack product development studio to, again, further these ideas from zero to one to bring it to market.
So you guys mostly focus on the startup community in Buffalo? Is that where it initially started, or that's where you continue to focus your energy and your marketing? That's the community that you're servicing, basically?
Yeah, we started there. We kind of grew out of it. We continue to service it regularly. We have, I would say, for the past 5 years or so, found ourselves in larger businesses who also want to act like a startup. So we are kind of split, I would say, maybe 60-40. We really early stage ideas, you know, whether they come inside of a larger org or from a founder who's ready to rock.
I'm really interested in, so the risk reward side of it, of the whole thing, of working for the startup community. I'm not an expert at all on the startup community in general, but I just wonder, I imagine if you're a service provider for the startup community, so you have the one side where you mentioned the options and like, I can get a share in promising, if you believe in promising companies, and basically you're trading, I assume you're just trading your service for monetary value, some monetary value in that company. But is the flip side, is there more risk with like, I can't pay, I ran out of money, these are fragile, right? These are fragile businesses. Can you just talk us a little bit about that? Or is that an issue, or am I just imagining that not to be something?
You're spot on. I think there are a number of risks with early stage companies, some of which you've already touched on. One is that, you know, if they're not funded or it's idea stage, they don't have a lot of money for a services company. So we had to be clever, right? In order to provide these services, we used lean and agile methodologies and just very rapid ways of working with them. But when you talk about the venture side, you're right. You know, a lot of those things go to zero, and we really have to believe in who the founders are, what their mission is, and that we could impact it. Because when that happens, right, we build more of a relationship and we're more active. It's not just like writing a check and letting it stand back. We have opinions on product and opinions on how, you know, to grow a user base. But ultimately, we don't run the company, and there are a lot of other functions in those organizations that need to provide for the founders to achieve their mission. So it's kind of finding that balance. But yeah, there's incredible risk with any of those ventures. I mean, some of them were just kind of signed, and we just believed in the team. And that's that common paradigm of betting on the jockey.
So I'm just curious, how often is it very infrequent, relatively infrequent, that you take a stake? How frequent is that? Because the reason I'm asking is because I start to wonder if you're doing it frequently, then your job is more than just design. It's all of a sudden investing and assessing the value of these investments. So I'm trying to understand how much does that even matter, or, you know?
Yeah, it's done relatively infrequently, and it usually comes up organically, right? So we'll usually provide a service for a year, number of years. We understand they're getting traction, whether they're going to raise another round, they're getting customers, we're helping them get there. And then it kind of organically happens where we say, okay, the risk has been lowered a bit based on our familiarity with the business. And now we feel more comfortable, you know, contributing from an investment level for, you know,
right. It's like a friends, you get to get in on the friends and family level or whatever, something like that. Like you already know, you know what's going on. You see the inside of the business because they've been hiring you. Okay. That's really cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. It's been fun and interesting and risky. You know, again, we've made assumptions that don't always work out or aren't on the trajectory that we'd prefer. But many do, because again, we have that influence. We like to build those candid relationships with people.
And it's a nice situation because, in a sense, you've got a lot of inside information before you have to take. Like, if you're not working for free from pre-launch, even if you're doing it inexpensively, you actually have got to see the founders in action and see what's going on with the customers. So, if you decide you're ready to either work cheap or for free in return for equity, you're actually doing that when you know a lot more about the quality of the organization and the business than a poor old angel investor would.
That's exactly right. I mean, we're quite figuratively in the trenches with them, building these things and understanding what their values are. I think that's a key part of it. You know, products will change, features will change, customers will have different opinions and sentiment, but the values and the drive and the persistence of the founder is where we really, you know, find people that we click with and we can help and push them forward.
And if we can talk about one, I know you want to talk about MentorDeck, and we will come on to that, but if you think of the companies you've got stakes in, are there any cases of that slightly interesting experience for the ego that someone else's business that you've got a small slice of is way more successful financially and scale-wise than anything you've done? So you've got part of other people's success more than your own successes, or do you have to grapple with that nice problem?
We do. And it's a good feeling to have. And it's a really good feeling to be a part of something that becomes much bigger. So one of our first kind of bets that we made was on a company called ACV Auctions. And we, you know, I remember sitting with the founders, and they had a sketch on a piece of paper. They said, we want to bring this to life. And they talked about it. There's an industry expert. And we've been working with them. We worked with their CTO and helped run their product for the first 2 years. And that was one of the companies that we made an investment in, simply because we knew the team and the strong team. And we said, hey, let's do this. And so they went public, I think, 2, maybe 3 years ago, and we continue to work with them today. So it was really, you know, that's a wonderful example of this is an idea on a sketch on a piece of paper that we got to see all the way through, you know, an initial public offering, and a company that, you know, employs well over 1,000 people at this point.
Nice. And if you think of fiascos and disasters, congratulations for that. And it's very nice to hear about success. If you think of things that didn't work out, are there any sort of what would you call shout out examples of things that went horribly wrong that you can share without sort of dumping on someone who might listen to this in a month's time and say, why is Jonathan talking about my nightmare or whatever?
Yeah, this is more common than not. But I won't name names, but what we see happens is founders will fall into the lifestyle of it, right? Revenue comes in, they're more comfortable with a steady kind of straight line. They're not really pushing for scale and pushing, you know, maybe even for a liquidity event or immense growth. And that's where it's, you know, when a founder kind of goes dark and doesn't communicate, that's where the challenges are. What good or bad, we know this is a roller coaster and success is not a straight line up and to the right. It's ups and downs, but usually when founders stop talking about what they're trying to do, that's when we know it's on a trajectory that might not benefit us in the long run.
Interesting. And would they naturally be talking to you? I mean, do you know that? Because you get the sort of status of an investor? Do they sort of like make reports to all the investors and you're there? I suppose you're there on the cap table. So you've got a sort of dual role. On the one hand, you're providing like some services to the organization. On the other hand, you sort of put a different hat on and show up as an investor. Is that the way it works in reality, or is it less structured than that?
It's slightly less structured, but it has some of those tones in it. I think, again, any good founder is going to send updates about what the company is doing, where they're headed, where their challenges are, certainly to their investors, so that investors can help them navigate these challenges in a way that benefits everybody. So, again, it's almost like the silence is the real red flag to say, okay, you know, maybe this isn't a business that we wanted to invest in, and it might just be a great business for those founders to run and be happy.
When you invest, I mean, if you can put a number on, it sounds like you've been transferring money to some of the companies as opposed to working for free. What's the largest investment you've made in anything other than MentorDeck? If you can put, and is it like six figures, seven figures, or is it a few tens of thousands, or can you give a sort of scale of what you're putting in?
Yeah, absolutely. It's on the lower end of that. So a few tens of thousands is really around the average.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're not sort of like all in on one project then?
That's right. And again, you know, we're conservative in how we invest and making sure that we still have cash flow to pay our team and keep everything running. Otherwise, we're collecting a lot of pieces of paper that might be worth something in the future, but odds tell us that most of them will just be that piece of paper.
How much have you thought about, like, cause it sounds like you've been pretty successful in that, you know, in that community. Isn't this kind of thing? Cause obviously it sounds to me that it's a lot of personal relationships and it's like a lot of, you need to get to know the people. But have you thought about moving this out into other communities, into other investment communities, into other startup communities outside of Buffalo? I mean, it seems like if you have this thing set up, it's like you have a program, you have this experience. Like, where are you going to take it? Have you thought about taking it outside and further, or is it just you're happy to stay in that community?
Yeah, we love the Buffalo community. Again, born and raised here. And we love what's happening, especially to see the growth that's happened over the past 20 years and the excitement. It's a different place. That being said, we're currently talking right now with a number of people on how to formalize this and have broader reach, you know, potentially bringing in partners and create, you know, a more impactful venture studio, like formal.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Good. Well, yeah, in terms of what you say, you're talking to partners about. So, could you imagine a sort of like copy paste? If you imagine you found someone a bit like you, like similar type of business in a different community, do you think that anyone doing what you do has that opportunity in their community? Because it's almost like I come back to this idea of insider trading. There's a company called Entrepreneur First that invests in entrepreneurial teams. They're a kind of European-based accelerator, and they're always looking for an edge. It seems like, as well as being good at what you do, you've got this sort of edge for investment of seeing things from the inside that normally wouldn't be available. So could you imagine your sort of model scaling across different communities? Is that and would it make sense? Or do you think that each company like yours would be so different in different communities, you couldn't really sort of scale it up to something across multiple startup communities?
Yeah, I believe you're dealing with the human element, right? So you need people who want to be active and want to focus on, you know, a portfolio of companies instead of just a single focus. And so there's this service element to it always, but absolutely. I mean, whether it's our brand or other people in other communities, this idea that you work with a company and provide a valuable service and then maybe convert that or share some of their risk, you know, that can be done, you know, virtually anywhere.
I think
in a way I recommend it because, you know, those things, when you do have your own skin in the game, there's something a little more pushing you at night and thinking in the shower. And it's like, I feel like there's a lot of magic in those moments. Mm-hmm. It's just that extra energy in virtually all early stage company needs the whole team thinking about that. So if you could have a service provider who does bring that energy and gives it the proper attention and thought, it could be a game changer.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the dream. I mean, you know, who's going to be more passionate about, like, it's hard to be, get anybody passionate about your business. Basically, if you can get your service provider, who's a critical actually service provider, passionate about it, that's, you know, obviously you're going to get a better service and you know, you guys got like skin in the game and like, you're interested. So I think the idea is brilliant. Actually, it's a good idea.
People get caught in services by wanting the client to nod and be happy in the short term, and we found success in having those candid, you know, disagreements and getting over those humps and through those battles, and then that long term relationship is just bound, and it becomes something really special. We'll sometimes say, like, you know, don't be afraid to be fired. Right. Like, be right. Candid and truthful with your clients that, you know, if your truth causes that resentment or feeling, then it might not be a good fit.
And they gain like massive experience. Like, you have all this experience, right? Because you've done it with a lot of the other companies. So like this company's doing it for their first, I expect often doing it for one of their first times. So like they get to leverage your experience. So again, that's huge. I mean, I'm sure they appreciate that as well.
Oh, it's huge. And it's, you know, they could hire these teams and full-time people. And it's far more expensive for them to do. And they often don't have all that experience.
Mm. Exactly.
So good tip for anyone out there listening. If you're going to hire someone, either hire Jonathan directly or someone as experienced as you. And I'd like to move on to this MentorDeck product, because we actually met because I'm a mentor in the startup community here in Lisbon, in Startup Lisboa. And I saw this platform, I signed up for their mentoring thing, and I thought, oh, that's a really nicely designed product. I wonder who made it. And because some of the other communities I'm involved in need sort of mentoring type facilities. So I came to you as a user before we ever met, but could you talk through the history of that product and what it is, and then the history of how it came into being for a first time listener, for example, Keeman?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So what MentorDeck is it allows people, often incubators, accelerators, peer groups, we're seeing small VC groups, you know, typically people who have a group of others, a group of mentors or advisors, that they provide that to others. So an incubator has access to a dozen, 24, 50 mentors, and they offer those to their founder. They're kind of like their special people. MentorDeck allows you to get those people in one place, present them in a very accessible, searchable directory, and then provides administrators, you know, managers of these incubators or funds to understand what mentors are being booked, what the quality of the ratings are, and, you know, if they're actually providing the value. Some people compensate off of that, but ultimately that's what MentorDeck does, and it continues to create these what I call micro communities. We believe in the power of a smaller group being more impactful than a big broad network like LinkedIn or something like that. Small groups of people with access to one another, access to each other's calendars, access to provide this verbal value exchange will create magic in the world. So that's an overview of what MentorDeck is. But the story of how it was created was, geez, this was maybe just a couple of years ago. Calendly was starting to come out and get more traction in the world. And I noticed a lot of executives and business professionals in Buffalo, New York were posting on social media saying, hey, Buffalo startup community entrepreneurs, I'm here to help. Here's a few hours on my Calendly. Book time with me. I'd love to give you advice. And I kept seeing these on all these different social media platforms. And I said, this needs to come together. So in a weekend, I wrote this static HTML directory page, bought the URL, openoffice.com, and posted these people. I said, hey, here you go, Buffalo, New York. They're all here, searchable. Go book, go find your people, and exchange this value. And so more people signed up, mentors, bookings. And so openoffice.com was Buffalo's little organic community, this organic directory that still exists today. It gets plenty of usage for free. You know, that's something that we hope to scale all over the world in many different cities in the near future. From that, it was the commercial opportunity of MentorDeck. Again, being a mentor in local incubators and accelerators, they were like in spreadsheets and like just manually emailing people to introduce one another. And it was, there was virtually no organization. Like maybe you were in an Airtable if you were more advanced, but most people did not do this. So a friend of mine who was at Techstars, we started to talk about what this thing could be. And funny enough, I had bought the MentorDeck URL 7 years prior. And I said, this is this kind of lightning moment where these things came together. And so we formalized that product offering for accelerators, incubators, peer groups, you know, university alumni groups, and offered it up to the world. And again, more and more traction. Techstars started sprouting up all these different groups all over the world. You have Startup Lisboa, you know, you have the universities, a lot of peer groups. So, you know, minority groups, women empowerment groups. It was all about, hey, let's provide access. Let's get people access. And that's a huge problem. And MentorDeck helps serve that.
Okay. I need to ask, cause I feel like stupid. I wasn't able to exactly follow how, so mentors, and this is just me not knowing exactly how startup community works that well. So basically what happens is people like me or people that are experienced business people, entrepreneurs, they say, look, I'd like to help out. I'd like to help out entrepreneurs. But is it also because, and you know, if I like your business, I also might invest. Is that part of what's behind it? So it's mentor means like, yeah, I'll help you. But then the person that's getting the mentorship or whatever it's called is getting also a potential investor. Is that part of the dynamic, or is it just purely help? Like I'm here to help and I need help.
I think that's a good question and point of clarification. So many other platforms will charge an hourly rate for mentoring. We almost put that in the consulting bucket. That is not what MentorDeck is for. First and foremost, it's for people who are experienced who want to help others up through their journey. So like people who want to help and do good and help others, foundational to our mission, right? There are absolutely second and third order consequences of, you know, advisory shares, investment opportunities, deal flow that comes through those relationships.
Okay. So basically that's what it is. It's basically, I want to help and I need help. And then are we now in Richard, you know what it looks like. Are we in like a TripAdvisor type situation here where then we're rating, like, I'm offering myself up, and then the people that have taken my advice don't particularly like it or don't like me. So I don't get a great rating. Is that part of the process or is it just connecting people?
Yeah, that's great. So it is part of the process. Essentially, you're invited via an administrator at a group like Startup Lisboa. It says, hey, can you mentor, put yourself up as a listing to give your time to these founders? You put your calendar link in, give a bit of time for people to actually just book right on your calendar. And then that directory, is kind of like this pre-vetted private circle that only goes out to those groups, founders, whomever it is, visitors, they go and book. It tracks the booking. And then a survey email goes out to everyone in the meeting that says, hey, how was your experience with Richard? You're rated on that. You can then provide some written feedback, but that is only shown to the admin. It is not shown to the individual. Right. So that analytical view of what's happening in your little micro network is only shown to the admin. So they say, hey, these mentors are superstars. This mentor is barely being booked. So it's less about a human or the technology saying, this is a perfect match. It's more, here's access to a private directory of powerful people that's searchable by skill and industry. So you can self-serve and take all that work off of the administrator at these groups.
Wow, I really like that idea. I think it's pretty cool. Sorry.
And the thing is, there are a lot of platforms mentoring's been around for a while. And so someone like me has seen different people trying to operate in this space, and it's is surprisingly tricky to get it right. And even within the platform metadata, because there are things that are totally out of your control, because obviously what you can solve for is convenience and ease of use, and that's very much done. But, you know, I've been to startup community weekends like decades ago where, you know, some of the mentors are like 22-year-olds who've done absolutely nothing. And some of the people who have like got the startups have got, you know, they're seriously wealthy people who, you know, they've sold a company and they want to start a new startup, and they've gone to startup weekend. And you get this sort of ludicrous mismatch between,
very much so. You know,
it's a bit of sort of a law student is giving, trying to give advice to a general partner of a big company law firm. And it's just, it's ridiculous. And because you've got this sort of, the process of becoming a mentor is somehow vetted, or hopefully vetted by the person setting it up, you solve for that. And anyway, I'd certainly say for anyone who's looking around for a mentoring type tool, it's certainly worth taking a look at MentorDeck, because I've seen quite a few of them, and it's certainly a nice, simple for the user platform to use. But can you talk a bit about, you know, the business side of it? Because we had a conversation a few days ago where you were giving me a few numbers, but what can you share about what stage you're at as a business? And you're obviously still running another business, so you haven't got people working on it full time. It's still a side project that's going well, or where are you now, and how does it work day to day?
Yeah, great question. So it really is somewhat of a side project, right? Of things that are kind of nights and weekends. We give it some attention during the day, but it has become more organic than anything. We've put no, you know, marketing dollars towards it. There are a lot of things that are foundational to products that just simply don't exist. So there's an incredible opportunity, especially with the organic growth that we've seen today. Today, the model is pretty straightforward. There's a freemium model. So virtually anybody anywhere in the world can go on to mentordeck.com. You can get your own mentor card and be placed into any of these private decks. You do have to be invited. There are no public decks yet. And you can also create your own little groups, your own decks, your own communities, as many as you'd like. You could create the top 10 female CTOs on the Eastern Seaboard, or, you know, investors in biotech, and create your own little private directory and have people kind of book time and watch that. If you want to pay for deeper analytics on who's booking, when they're booking, their email, and more in-depth ratings, you can pay $150 a month. And then that's discounted on a yearly rate as well. But, you know, we went up and down. We said, hey, let's, you know, pricing tiers and all sorts of things. And we tried a bunch. We saw a wide range of sentiment and price sensitivity from people who said, this is far too expensive, people who didn't bat an eye at it. So we really just said, hey, let's keep it simple for now. We care far more about distribution. Let's bring in this freemium model, let this thing spread and grow all over the world. And then, you know, there are plenty of opportunities to you know, shore up that business model and make the pricing model make sense for how many people that could use this. And the truth is, today we're focused on incubators and accelerators. We have alumni groups and, again, like peer groups who are emerging. But when you think about how many circles you can draw around groups of people in order to give others access to, it's incredibly powerful. And there's so many groups that this can apply to.
It's really interesting. It sounds to me like it's what's actually most important to you is these micro communities rather than the actual mentors, because the communities will be the ones that actually bring the mentors. They should be the ones that bring the mentors into you. And I was actually thinking as you were talking before you said it, actually, because you say, okay, that's great that it's for investment, but I'm wondering what are your top potential like use cases for other non sort of like startup type, because it sounds like it's a very valuable, useful thing. Now who should be hearing about, like, who should be using this?
Yeah, sure. So again, today any accelerator or incubator, even co-working places, they have the group of mentors that they offer as kind of a value add to their programming. So those are kind of no-brainer beachhead. Then we talk about alumni groups, which we're seeing more and more traction in, different universities who are typically in that entrepreneurship theme that want to get people together and get them cross-collaborating. What we're seeing is it's not just mentors that they're putting into these decks, these directories. They'll mix in VCs, founders, and mentors into the same kind of private little DAC, this directory, and have them all be the initiate of the meeting, which becomes very special. We also see things like startup weekends and other groups where the startups, all the founders, will create profiles, and then the VCs and others can look and browse this directory and then initiate their first meeting. So we're kind of seeing a lot of interesting use cases on who gets published and who is the initiate in these groups. We want to continue to grow that because, like I said, these are all private. You know, Kimon, you could not go onto MentorDeck today and browse a community and find your subsegment of people. In the future, you will be able to do that. You'll be able to find that special small group of people where you could share, you know, calendar time. Mm-hmm. Time is the most precious resource we all have, and we want to protect that and keep that sacred while still allow access to people who otherwise did not have access.
It's really cool.
And you're in a really interesting situation, which was probably going to be familiar to some of our current listeners and future listeners, which is you've got your day job, you've got your regular, you're not just your day job, you've got your existing functioning business, and your side project is beginning to sort of get, well, in Poland we say arms and legs. It's beginning to look like it could be something really big. And what do you see your choices are? What do you see your different options at the moment? And how far are you to sort of resolving it? Because obviously you could chuck everything else in and become CEO and go full time, or you could look for a CEO. But just talk us through where you are at the moment, because I think it's a really interesting time, interesting problem, and good problem, but an interesting problem to talk through.
Very much so. And, you know, the truth is, there have been many different project launches into the world that have fallen flat on their face that didn't get this lovely traction that we have in MentorDeck today. So this one has put us in a position to make some of those decisions about where we place our efforts. Again, you know, running the digital product studio, we're uniquely positioned to have designers and engineers and product managers put time onto this so we can start to create that blend of time. That said, I'm also very thankful to have a co-founder at my product studio and an incredible leadership team that could help spread the effort across MentorDeck and these other things. So to answer your question more specifically, and it actually ties into what Kimon is saying, is the idea of the venture studio formal is emerging with this. MentorDeck being a part of that, there's some other things that might fall into that where we are actually generating our own products. We know how to bring them to market. We know how to capture revenue, and we know how to kill them if they're not working, right? And so whether that's internal ideas of our close network, or, you know, whomever might be a part of that company, I think that's the closest thing to what we're thinking about today, all while Helm Services continues to run and provide an incredible, you know, value to the world today and to these entrepreneurs who need that advice and need that kind of production.
So I'm not sure. Maybe it's just my brain on a Friday evening here in Europe not working. But in terms of lead, I mean, could this be spun out into a separate business with a CEO other than you and your co-founder, or might you become this? Because if this is as big as it might be, then you probably want more than a couple of guys part-time.
That's right.
Particularly running it, because it's all very well to say to your contractors, you know, come and work part-time on this, but are they going to be motivated to work really well part-time if the leadership is also part-time? And maybe this could be a whole new thing of highly successful companies where there isn't a full-time leader, which would be a cool thing to be responsible for, but is it the right way?
So you're exactly right. I think our leading sentiment on it is that it deserves dedicated attention and a dedicated team, whether we raise a seed round, whether we raise a larger fund that is applied to this, it does deserve that attention. Because again, we've seen so many things go nowhere, and to have the organic traction and some of these trend curves be so up and to the right without doing anything that is formally known as good in product work, it's almost like we must give it what it deserves to live and the mission. You know, like, this is, started a service company. I love working with people and making something from nothing. You know, someone who had an idea can then create a company that now employs 1,000 people. You know, to be a small part of that means something. And I think the same goes for mentorship. If mentorship's platform can connect people and that value can be exchanged, that can forever change someone's trajectory on their life. And if we can continue to do that in the world and give access to those who don't have access and don't have familiarity with how to do X, Y, or Z, that like really means something to me and my team to go further that in the world.
Fantastic. Well, it's extremely exciting. Kimo, I just think it's unusual. Normally we're going, because you've succeeded in your previous businesses, you're kind of here that we're not typically interviewing people at early stage businesses here, but it's just that I took a decision and Kimo's quite supportive of my, not always, sometimes supportive of my random decisions, but it's exciting to be at this stage of the journey with something that's clearly on track. Kimo, is there anything else you want to ask about?
Well, I think that you're touching on something. So you started to touch on something, or you started to articulate something at the end that I think is really important, which is the meaning of your business and like, what do you do and the meaningfulness of your business to yourself and to your employees as well. And I actually do think that this mentorship idea, you know, you're basically giving access. It's a valuable service. I mean, I'm not surprised that it's doing well. It's valuable. There's people like, I am very much like to give my time and help people. And I think there's a lot of people who have a lot of experience who want to share that. And I don't need to get anything for it. It's more just that I feel like I helped somebody. And so like, you've actually created something that actually just allows that. Now, obviously it's, you got to capture whatever the genie in the bottle or whatever it is. You got to figure out how to actually make it work probably on a larger scale. But fundamentally, I like that. And I guess what I think it's just more now for the listeners is I just think if you could like, it's, that's the dream is fine. And I know I can almost tell in talking to you, I don't want to be presumptuous because I'm sure your design business is fantastic and you love it very much, but like, just listening to you talk, when you started to talk about this, your level of enthusiasm and whatever, there's some love. You have some love for this thing. And so, and I think that that's great. I mean, I think that's the thing you should do. I mean, I think it's great to do the thing. And I'm not trying to anyone who's listening to the other, who works in your other business. I'm saying you don't love that other business, but I think it's important to love something basically. And I think, this has a lot of good things. So, I mean, I like that basically.
Thank you. Thank you. And there's, you know, the mission and helping people, and honestly, the scale is interesting. Obviously with a services business, we're a dozen people where we could be local, right? We can focus on this community and grow organically. And that business is a straight line. You know, straight line growth, year after year, profitable, cash flow, wonderful. That might not be MentorDeck, but MentorDeck has, you know, it's already all over the entire world, from, you know, the UK to Saudi Arabia, Taiwan, Japan, US. Like, to do that organically, it gives you that tingly feeling.
Yeah, wow, that's cool. Helping that's people. Cool.
That's cool. That tingly feeling is a very nice thing. And I think perhaps that's a nice tone on which to end, that for many entrepreneurs listening, people have had something go right. There's that tingly feeling.
Look for that tingly feeling.
That, and I have to say, that's the first time I've ever heard that in a podcast. So possibly you've done something for the first time. Well, Jonathan, I'd like to thank you very much for your time. I know we've got ongoing communications going about the things that you're helping with, and which I appreciate very much. But is there anything we haven't asked or you'd like to share with the listeners that we haven't touched on yet, or do you think we've covered everything?
You know, I think we've covered it. Just begin, right? For anybody who's out there listening who is hesitant to start and take that first step, don't be bogged down by the you know, thousands of steps that you'll take after the first one. Take the first step and the next one, one step at a time. Just begin.
It's awesome advice.
Fantastic advice. Well, thank you very much indeed for your time. And what else? Use MentorDeck.
Thanks for having me. This is fun. I really enjoyed this.